Jerusalem, City of Reconciliation.
Our subject is Jerusalem, the City of Reconciliation. The talk will be divided into two parts, the historic part, which we'll move along very quickly because you're familiar with most of the history, and the second part will be on Jacob's trouble. Jerusalem, the City of Peace, Ur HaShalom, literally City of Peace. The name of this town was Urushalom, a word probably of Semitic origin that apparently means the foundation of Salem, or foundation of God. And this will be a reality when God will start the new covenant with Israel after Jacob's trouble. Jerusalem, the City of Peace. During its long history, Jerusalem has been destroyed at least twice, besieged 23 times, attacked 52 times, and captured and recaptured 44 times. The oldest part of the city was settled in the 4th millennium BCE. In 1538, walls were built around Jerusalem under Solomon the Magnificent. Today, those walls define the old city, which has been traditionally divided into four quarters, known since the early 19th century as the Armenian, Christian, Jewish, and Muslim quarters. The old city became a World Heritage Site in 1981 and is on the list of World Heritage in danger. Modern Jerusalem has grown far beyond the old city boundaries. And this is taken from Wikipedia. Walls of Jerusalem. A newly excavated Jerusalem site includes a wall claimed to have been built by biblical King Solomon. The walls of Jerusalem surround the old city of Jerusalem. The walls were built between 1535 and 1538, when Jerusalem was part of the Ottoman Empire. The history of Jerusalem. You will notice on this chart or graph that Jerusalem has been under the leadership or rulership of many, many countries. And on the bottom line, this would represent the history of measurement of time. And we're mainly interested where you see the two arrows in the Roman time and also in the Ottoman time, which would include the British and also Israel and Jordan, and finally Israel. The first mention of Jerusalem in Genesis chapter 14, verses 14 to 16 and 18 to 19. And when Abram heard that his relative had been taken captive, he led out his trained men, born in his house, 318, and went in pursuit as far as Dan. And he divided his forces against them by night, he and his servants, and defeated them, and pursued them as far as Hobath, which is north of Damascus. And when he brought back all the goods, he brought back his relatives, Lot and his possessions, and also the women and the people. The first mention of Jerusalem continued in verses 18 and 19. And Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. Now he was a priest of God Most High. And he blessed him and said, "Blessed be Abram of God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth." A city called Salem. In the book of Genesis, chapter 14, verse 18, it mentions a city called Salem, which most Jewish commentators believe refers to Jerusalem, ruled by Melchizedek. According to one Jewish tradition reported by the Midrash, Jerusalem was founded by Abraham's forefathers, Shem and Eber. In Hebrews chapter 7, verses 1 and 2, we read, "For this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham as he was returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him, to whom also Abraham apportioned a tenth part of all of the spoil, was first of all, by the translation of his name, King of Peace. And in verse 2, the Hebrew spelling of the latter half of the verse suggests a dual form, hence a twofold blessing. Attack on Jerusalem. This is just a picture to illustrate that Jerusalem has been anything but a city of peace. David captures Jerusalem. Jerusalem becomes the city of David and the capital of the United Kingdom, both as the secular and the religious center. David brings the Ark to Jerusalem with a great celebration. And you will notice, as we have illustrated here, that we believe that Israel probably was the first one to have a marching band. So when you think of all the colleges with the marching band, this is nothing new, because Israel had a marching band of several thousand individuals. And you'll also notice that the ark was on a cart, and Uzzah irreverently pushed the ark and the Lord took his life. You'll notice that they carried the ark on a cart, which is a violation of what the Lord wanted. So the next time they were carrying it, the Levites were carrying the ark, but again they had a very large marching band. Solomon's first temple. King Solomon built the first temple on Mount Moriah. It took 7 years and 183,300 men to build the temple. In 1 Kings 9:3 we read, "And the Lord said to him, I have heard your prayer and your supplication, which you have made before me. I have consecrated this house, which you have built, putting my name there forever, and my eyes and my heart will be there perpetually." In 1 Kings 11, verse 4, we read, "For it came about when Solomon was old, his wives turned his heart away after other gods, and his heart was not wholly devoted to the Lord his God, as the heart of David, his father, has been." Solomon permitted idol worship on a mountain east of Jerusalem, the Mount of Olives. Hezekiah. Sennacherib and his army lay siege to Jerusalem. In 2 Kings 19, verse 15, it's recorded that Hezekiah went to the temple and there prayed. The first king of Judah to do so in approximately 20 years, since the time of Solomon. God delivers Hezekiah with a miraculous victory. And in 2 Kings chapter 19, verse 35, it tells of the angel of the Lord destroying 185,000 Assyrians. And Hezekiah becomes mortally ill, and he prays and receives a 15-year extension. God defends Jerusalem for my own sake and for my servant David's sake. This is just a little map to show that Jerusalem was not a very large city, and we're all familiar with the Garden of Gethsemane. And this would be Golgotha, and this would illustrate that the site of the Lord's Last Supper. And this would be the palace of Herod, and also this would be where Jesus would be crucified. And this would be the skull that we're all familiar with, which would be Golgotha. We're all familiar with the 70 weeks or 90 years of prophecy from Daniel, and this is taken from volume 2, pages 63 to 72. So the time would be from 454 to 1881, to 36, excuse me. 454, we go to 36, and then the last week would be from 29 to 36, and Jesus would be cut off in the midst of the week. And we know that this would correspond to 1874, 1878, and 1881. lament over Jerusalem. And this is Jesus speaking. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her. How often I wanted to gather your children together, the way a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, and you were unwilling. Behold, your house is being left to you desolate. The fall of Jerusalem, AD 70. 1 million plus Jewish perish. The temple was destroyed in 70 AD. The emperor Vespasian dispatches his son Titus to lead the assault on Jerusalem. Titus reportedly refused to accept a wreath of victory, saying that the victory did not come through his own efforts, but that he had served as an instrument of God's wrath. And this is taken from Philostratus. Jesus had called Jerusalem the killer of the prophets and stones of those who sent forth to her. Jesus' prophecy concerning 70 AD, happy are the barren women and the wombs that did not give birth. Jews in Israel, through the destruction of the temple through the Ottoman Empire, while the Jewish population was not given a decree to leave the land, the conditions such as under Fiscus Judaicus, a special tax imposed on the Jews, were grave enough to convince most residents to disperse around the globe. The Ottoman Empire conquered Palestine in 1517 and held it until the empire declined at the end of World War I. The Ottomans, though practicing Muslims, were much less harsh on the Jewish community than previous Islamic empires and actually permitted them to thrive. Napoleon invades Egypt. In 1798, Napoleon invaded Egypt. Though he never captured Palestine, the European influence in the Middle East brought many reforms for the Jewish community. Full citizenship took place in Palestine in 1878. And then we're also familiar with Israel's double. So Israel will have a period of 1,845 years of favor from 1830 B.C. and then to the cross at 33 and a half. Then we'd also have a period of 1,845 years of disfavor, which would end in 1878. So we have another diagram of the favor and disfavor of Israel. And Zechariah mentions that this very day would this prophecy take place. And Isaiah 40 verse 12 predicts the end of the double. And Jeremiah chapter 16 verses 11 to 18 predicts the conditions of disfavor. After 1878, we have two beautiful scriptures taken from Isaiah chapter 61 verse 7 and the last part of verse 8. Instead of your shame, you will have a double portion. And instead of humiliation, they will shout for joy over their portion. Therefore, they will possess a double portion in their land. Everlasting joy will be theirs, and I will make an everlasting covenant with them. Benjamin Disraeli, he was the first Prime Minister of England, and he chaired the Berlin Congress of Nations in 1878, giving Jews the right to colonize Palestine. In 1878, Disraeli, the only Prime Minister of England, arranged for the British to purchase a major interest in the Suez Canal Company in Ottoman-controlled Egypt. Disraeli chairs the Berlin Congress of Nations in 1878, giving Jews the right to colonize Palestine. In 1878, the first Jewish colony, Petah Tikva, a name aptly meaning Gate of Hope, was established by Jewish refugees from Russia. Theodore Herzl. In 1896, Theodore Herzl of Vienna called the first Zionist Congress to issue a call to Jewry everywhere to return to their ancestral homeland. Chaim Weizmann, the first president of Israel in 1948. In 1917, the government of Great Britain, through the intervention of the Jewish chemist Dr. Chaim Weizmann, issued the Balfour Declaration, placing His Majesty's government of England on record as favoring the establishment of a Jewish state in Palestine. The beginning of prophecy. In 1917, the Balfour Declaration produces hope for a Jewish state in Palestine. Israel becomes a nation in 1948 with a population of 806,000. In 1967, the Jewish people own Jerusalem. Israel becomes a state. David Ben-Gurion, the first prime minister of Israel, publicly pronouncing the Declaration of the State of Israel, May 14, 1948, Tel Aviv. Israel beneath a large portrait of Theodore Herzl, the founder of modern political Zionism. This is just a chart to illustrate the growth of the Jewish people from the year 1885 to 1917. So we're just concerned with this column to show the large increase of the Jewish population. The Muslims also increased quite a bit. The Christians were static, and also we have come up with a total of 746,000. And the important point would be that the Jewish people would rule Jerusalem since the war of 1967. And in 1948, the population was 806,000. And in 2016, the population is 8,522,000. And that would include all of the Jews and the Muslims or the Arabs who are living together. Now, before we go into the prophetic part, I'd like to quote Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24. And I'd like to quote two translations. One translation says we should provoke one another unto love and good works. And the word provoke is used in a positive way. And then another translation would be we should stimulate one another unto love and good works. So I'd like to mention that the thoughts that you hear now are meant to stimulate you and not to provoke you. Two parts of Jacob's trouble. Israel part one. The nations attack Israel for its spoil. In Ezekiel chapter 38 verses 11 to 12, and you will say, I will go up against the land of the unwalled villages. I will go against those who are at rest, that live securely, all of them living without walls and having no bars or gates, to capture spoil and to seize plunder and to turn our hand against the waste places which are now inhabited and against the people who are gathered from the nations who have acquired cattle and goods who live at the center of the world. God delivers Israel, recorded for us in Ezekiel chapter 38, verse 23. And I will magnify myself, sanctify myself, and make myself known in the sight of many nations, and they will know that I am the Lord. So we believe the spoil that the Gentiles will come after will be all of the technological advances that Israel is producing at the present time. Part two, and this would be Jacob's trouble. In Jerusalem, which would be part two now, we read in Zechariah chapter 12, verse 1, God reviews creation and the permission of evil, and he prepares us for the final attack on Jerusalem. The burden of the word of the Lord who stretches out the heavens, lays the foundation of the earth, and forms the spirit of man within him. This is a picture, a diagram to illustrate the Big Bang Theory, which is no longer a theory. The expansion comes from the Big Bang, and these are galaxies, and if you see a galaxy in a red, that would mean they're traveling at a very fast pace. And if you see a galaxy in the blue, that would mean they're traveling at a slower pace. The reason we were illustrating this is God is taking us from the very beginning of creation to the last act, which will be the attack on Jerusalem. Jerusalem prophetic. In Zechariah chapter 12, verses 2 and 3, we read, "Behold, I am going to make Jerusalem a cup that causes relief to all the peoples around. And when the siege is against Jerusalem, it will also be against Judah." Verse 3. "And it will come about in that day that I will make Jerusalem a heavy stone for all the peoples. All who lift it will be severely injured, and all the nations of the earth will be gathered against it." In Zechariah 14:2, we read, "For I will gather all the nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city will be captured, and the houses plundered, and the women ravished, and half of the city exiled, but the rest of the people will not be cut off from the city." So Zechariah describes the last humiliation of the Jews. We have to realize that this is a very important point. In Revelation 19:7, this is the New American Standard. None of this can happen until we read this scripture. "Let us rejoice and be glad and give the glory to him, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his bride has made herself ready." So the Lord has to remove all of the spirit-begotten individuals off the face of the earth. And the expression, "in that day," is repeated for us in Zechariah chapter 12, verse 3, 4, 6, 8, 9, and 11. And in Zechariah chapters 12 to 14, this expression, "in that day," is repeated 16 times to distinguish that this is a very specific event at a very specific time. The clans of Judah. In Zechariah chapter 12, verses 5 to 7, we read, "Then the clans of Judah will say in their hearts, 'A strong support for us are the inhabitants of Jerusalem through the Lord of hosts, their God.'" And then in verse 6, which is not on the screen, it says, "In that day," and verse 7, "the Lord will also save the tents of Judah first, in order that the glory of the house of David and the glory of the inhabitants of Jerusalem may not be magnified above it." Judah has to be delivered first, and we believe that that would represent the ancient worthies. In Genesis chapter 49, verse 10, "The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the people." And we're all familiar with the sure mercies of David, recorded for us in Psalms 89, verses 3 and 4. "And I will make a covenant with my chosen. I have sworn to David, my servant. I will establish your seed forever and build upon your throne to all generations." In Zechariah chapter 12, verses 8 and 9, we read, "In that day, the Lord will defend the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and the one who will be feeble among them in that day will be like David, and the house of David will be like God, like the angel of the Lord before him. And it will come about in that day that I will set about to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem." Now, this is a suggestion. This is not a doctrine. It is a suggestion. The clans of Judah are the ancient worthies. We have a similar situation in 2 Chronicles chapter 2, verse 20. Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, was going to be attacked by Moab, Ammon, and others. Jehoshaphat summons a fast throughout Judah, recorded for us in 2 Chronicles chapter verse 4, and the prayer of Jehoshaphat, recorded for us in 2 Chronicles chapter 20, verses 6, 7, and 12. Verse 6, and said, O Lord, the God of our fathers, art thou not God in the heavens, and art thou not ruler over all the kings of the nations? Power and might are in thy hand, so that no one can stand against thee. Continuing the prayer in verse 7, did thou not, O our God, drive out the inhabitants of the land before thy people Israel, and give it to the descendants of Abraham, thy friend, forever? Verse 12, O our God, wilt thou not judge them? For we are powerless before this great multitude who are coming against us, nor do we know what to do. But our eyes are on thee. God answers to Jehoshaphat, which we believe would be the ancient worthies. In 2 Chronicles chapter 20, verse 15, we read, Listen, O Judah and inhabitants of Jerusalem, and King Jehoshaphat, for thus says the Lord to you, Do not fear or be dismayed because of this great multitude, for the battle is not yours, but God's. 2 Chronicles chapter 20, verses 17 to 24, we read, You need not fight in this battle. Station yourselves, stand, and see the salvation of the Lord on your behalf, O Judah and Jerusalem. Do not fear or be dismayed. Tomorrow go out to face them, for the Lord is with you. Continuing verse 20, as Jehoshaphat stood and said, Listen to me, O Judah, inhabitants of Jerusalem. Put your trust in the Lord your God, and you will be established. Put your trust in his prophets and succeed. And when he had consulted with the people, he appointed those who sang to the Lord and those who praised him in holy attire as they went out before the army and said, Give thanks to the Lord for his loving kindness everlasting. Then on the fourth day they assembled in the valley of Baraka, and there they blessed the Lord. Therefore they have named that place the Valley of Baraka until today. And every man of Judah and Jerusalem returned with Jehoshaphat at their head, returning to Jerusalem with joy, for the Lord had made them to rejoice over their enemies. And they came to Jerusalem with harps, lyres, and trumpets to the house of the Lord. Continuing God's answer to Jehoshaphat, which represents the ancient worthies. In Zechariah chapter 14, verses 12 to 13, we read, Now this will be the plague with which the Lord will strike all the peoples who have gone to war against Jerusalem. Their flesh will rot while they stand in their feet, and their eyes will rot in their sockets, and their tongues will rot in their mouths. And it will come about in that day that a great panic from the Lord will fall on thee, and they will seize one another's hand, and the hand of one will be lifted against the hand of another. In that day, the Lord will defend the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and the one who is feeble among them in that day will be like David, and the house of David will be like God, like the angel of the Lord before them. And it will come about in that day that I will set about to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem. In Zechariah chapter 14, verse 3, we read, Then the Lord will go forth and fight against those nations as when he fought on a day of battle. In Zechariah chapter 12, verses 10 to 11, we read, And I will pour out on the house of David and on the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of grace and supplication, so that they will look upon me whom they have pierced, and they will mourn for him as one mourns for an only son, and they will weep bitterly over him like the bitter weeping over a firstborn. In that day there will be a great mourning in Jerusalem, like the mourning of Hadad Rimmon in the plain of Megiddo. In Zechariah 14:9 we read, and the Lord will be king over all the earth. In that day the Lord will be the only one, and his name the only one. Blessings. In Zechariah chapter 8, verses 20 to 23, we read, thus saith the Lord of hosts, it will yet be that peoples will come, even the inhabitants of many cities, and the inhabitants of the one will go to another, saying, let us go at once to entreat the favor of the Lord, and to seek the Lord of hosts, I will also go. So many peoples and mighty nations will come to seek the Lord of hosts in Jerusalem, and to entreat the favor of the Lord. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, in those days 10 men from the nations of every language will grasp the garment of the Jews, saying, let us go with you, for we have heard that God is with you. Now you'll notice in verse 23 that there's a change in the tense of the words. It does not say in that day, but it says in those days. And this will be when the new covenant goes into effect. And in Ezekiel chapter 39, verses 21 to 23, and I will set my glory among the nations, and all the nations will see my judgment, which I have executed, and my hand which I have laid on them. And the house of Israel will know that I am the Lord their God from that day onward. And the nations will know that the house of Israel went into exile for their iniquity, because they acted treacherously against me, and I hid my face from them. So I gave them into the hand of their adversaries, and all of them fell by the sword. God is with you. Zechariah 8:23. Thus said the Lord of hosts. You'll notice it changes now. In those days, 10 men from the nations of every language will grasp the garment of a Jew, saying, let us go with you, for we have heard that God is with you. So this is when the new covenant will go into effect. God is with you. This is Zechariah 8:23 again. And Farrar Fenton offers a different translation. It says, thus saith the Lord of hosts, in those times, 10 men of various languages of the heathen will encourage themselves and seize the hand of a Jew and say, we will go with you, for we have heard that God is with you. The Feast of Booths. This is covered for us in Zechariah chapter 14, verses 16 to 19. This is when we will have the start of the new covenant. Then it will come about that any who are left of all the nations that went against Jerusalem will go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to celebrate the Feast of Booths. And it will be that whichever of the families of the earth does not go up to Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, there will be no rain upon them. And if the families of Egypt does not go up or enter, then no rain will fall on them. And it will be the plague which the Lord will smite the nations who do not go up to celebrate the Feast of Booths. This will be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all the nations who do not go up to celebrate the Feast of Booths. God has said that he has chosen Jerusalem as the place where he has put his name forever. Jerusalem will be the capital of the world for the new covenant. We're not going to read these scriptures, but it's covered in 2 Chronicles chapter 6, verse 6, 33, verse 7, Psalms chapter 46, verse 4, chapter 48, verses 1 to 8, and chapter 83, verse 3. Jerusalem will be the capital city of reconciliation. It will be the capital city of the world. Shalom, and may the Lord bless these considerations.